Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
So, you think you're untouchable?
Word life, this is basic thugonomics. This is big, basic thugonomics. Word life.
Look in my eyes, what do you see? The cult of personality.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to have pressed play and are listening from. This is Chain Wrestling with Mags and Si. I am Si, and as always, I am overjoyed to be joined by my co-host and the better half of this partnership by a stretch, the best in the world to my Doctor of Thugonomics, the WWF ice cream bars to my Fruity Pebbles, and very recently crowned the Chops, Kicks and Near Falls Podcaster of the Year, the podfather himself, Mr. Mags. How are we doing, my friend?
Wow, that's an amazing introduction. I thought I was going to be the John Laurinaitis to your Vince McMahon. But it's a pleasure as always. Wow, and to be part of a multi-award-winning show like Chain Wrestling, it's an absolute honour.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I want to say thank you to anyone who voted for myself, for Mags, for any of Mags' shows, for my other show, and for Chain Wrestling as well in the Chops, Kicks and Near Falls end of year awards. It's truly humbling. It's really, really a great feeling to know that people sort of appreciate what we're doing. Me and Mags were talking about it briefly before we actually pressed the record button. And it really is nice just to know that people are actually appreciative or at least are enjoying what we're doing to the point where you're willing to click vote and show us a little bit of love. So I appreciate that. Yeah. And Mags, congratulations, mate. Podcaster of the Year. Thoroughly deserved, my friend.
Thank you very much. And as I've said on other people's shows and then to people in private, this isn't an award where I think that I am the best at all. I am only as good as the people that I work with and the people that that support and help my podcast. And so this, for me, is a team award. It's guys like you. It's the Radio Techers guys. It's the Talk of the Tail guys. I'll even give props to Paul Tolley off Badlands for the little bit of help that he gives me with that show. But yeah, I'm only as good as the people I work with. If it was just me, I don't think I would have won any awards, never mind get any listeners.
I think you're being far too modest there, mate, far too modest. But on the topic of Badlands there and your podcast wife, as you refer to him as, I was listening to an episode the other day, and you used that term, referred to him as your podcast wife, as you quite often do. Yeah. It kind of got me thinking a little bit. Does that make me sort of a bit on the side?
Should I feel
a bit dirty about all this?
Me and Paul have a well-documented open relationship. He's on another podcast with five other blokes. So,
okay.
Do you know what I mean? There's no rules in terms of our relationship.
It does sound grotty.
we're very open-minded. Keys in the bowl and away you go.
Fantastic stuff. Okay, moving on from that little bombshell we just dropped there. Mags, how was your Christmas, mate? How's your weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed this year's Christmas. I'm not really a big lover of Christmas. It's never been, even as a kid, it wasn't something I was really that bothered about. It's more about the little ones having the seeing the smiles on the kids and the grandkids' faces. But I did get a couple of pretty badass gifts. I got a replica of my single favorite title belt in the whole of the wrestling world, the red block logo WWF Intercontinental title, which was only held by Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat. And I also got a bean to cup coffee machine because I have a massive addiction to coffee, and yeah, I've always wanted a machine that will grind the beans and make me a brew at the same time.
Grinding beans, eh? We're not getting back to the keys in the bowl thing, are we?
Beans in a bowl.
I agree with you, man. Christmas is, for me now, I can kind of take it or leave it, I guess. It is all about the kids and so on. It's a bit of a shame that I haven't been able to see other family members because of what's been going on. But there's plenty of people in the world who have got it worse than I. Speaking of the kids, though, a little quick story before we get on to today's main topic. I've really had a realization in the last couple of days that I am getting old and I'm no longer, viewed as young and in the trends, I guess. I went shopping with my middle daughter. It's like Boxing Day, we normally pop into town because they get a lot of money from relatives and gift vouchers and so on. My lad spends it on computer stuff. My youngest daughter buys, well, this year she's been buying AEW figures and a bit of makeup and so on. My middle daughter very much a, I don't want to say label freak because that's not really accurate, but she's very particular about what she wears. So
trend follower.
Yeah. So she wants to go into town and go to JD Sports is like her mecca. This is her favourite place.
Good trainers.
Yeah, trainers and tracksuit bottoms and hoodies and all this sort of stuff. So we go in there, and the particular trainers that she wanted, they didn't have her size. So we were looking around, you know, at the different options they had. And I'm pointing stuff out. And I'm getting told on a regular basis, no, 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 no. And then some of these no's were with the expression of, oh, I've got two heads.
Yeah,
and I'm looking at stuff and I'm thinking, yeah, exactly. And I'm looking at some of these items, I'm thinking, I reckon that's tidy, that. I'd wear that myself. You know?
I don't know if saying that would add to going, oh, well, do you know what then, Dad? You're right. If you'd wear them, I'll definitely wear them.
Yeah, and the thing is, we sort of went through the trainers and so on, and then she went to look at tracksuits, and she's got a big thing about Puma at the moment. When I was younger, Puma wasn't thought of as being a cool brand, but apparently it is now. That shows how out of touch I am. And yeah, she's, for example, she spent £20 today on gloves. A pair of gloves bags. £20 freaking pound. That's 2 months of WWE Network, mate. Do you know what I mean? On gloves. Just because they got a little white Nike tick on it. £20 freaking quid. You know? And then she's looking at the tracksuits and she's going, well, like this one. I'm like, why like this one here? Well, it's plain black with the Adidas logo on. I'm thinking, I can't go wrong with that. It's plain black for crying out loud. I said, hey, what about this one here, sweetheart? And she looked at me, looked at the joggers, looked back at me, rolled her eyes and went, I wouldn't even wear those to stay home in.
Oh!
And I was like, whoa, okay. So I just basically, like I was the naughty kid who had been told off, just followed her around the shop with my gob shirt and my head down until she was finished shopping, mate. But it was a real shock to the system that I'm very much out of touch now with what people deem cool, I think.
Wow. It's heartbreaking as well because you think you're a hip, cool parent and then you get brought down to earth with a massive bump like that when you're told, no, what are you doing? Go sit in the corner. I'll come to you when I've finished.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be honest. I mean, I've used the word trendy and you've used the word hip in the last 2 minutes. So I don't think we are that cool. We're not cool, are we, Max?
No. I don't know if I'd like to lump myself in that conversation. I think she aimed it at you, Sam, and I don't think she particularly meant I wasn't cool. I think I'm hip. I'm down with the kids. That sounds Max, wrong.
Yeah, where are we going again? We're in dark territory. Mag is hit. That's the title of the episode, mate. That's what's going on Spotify this week. Anyway, after that little catch up there, should we get on to today's topic?
Yes, let's. A topic that for me, this was smack dab in the middle of my like kind of wrestling hiatus. I was checked out of wrestling in about 2006, didn't come back to about 2016. That's in terms of watching. I obviously kept up with like wrestling websites and kind of dirt sheets to know what was going on, but I wasn't actively watching week-to-week programming. So, yeah, it was a fun way to go back and look at it. I mean, obviously, this match, it's huge, and I've seen it multiple times, but it was good to go back and watch it for research purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was a huge CM Punk fan. I didn't sort of take time off from wrestling when it started to really suck. I suppose I'm just a glutton for punishment, really. Like wandering around JD Sports after queuing for God knows how long just to be insulted. I'm a glutton for punishment. I sat through Raw, SmackDown, and so on through some absolutely atrocious episodes purely because there was nothing else for me to watch. There was no other real wrestling out there for me to view on a regular basis that I found easily accessible. There was no AEW at this stage. Finding we had TNA, I guess, but that was a bit
very hit and miss. Yeah.
Yeah, so WWE is kind of all I really had. So when CM Punk came along, and I'd seen bits of bobs of him in Ring of Honor and so on, when he came along to WWE, I was very excited. Seeing him progress through the ECW, WWE brand, that car wreck that was, you know, that awful promotion they ran with the zombies in and so on, was interesting. And then going up to the main roster, and competing in the matches he did and winning titles he did, I really got on board with CM Punk. And this era, for me, this whole storyline, the three main performers, obviously Cena, Punk, and Mr. McMahon, I think all three of them are absolutely fantastic throughout the whole thing. And it really, really reignited my love of professional wrestling.
Yeah, and obviously looking at it through my eyes where I didn't watch this at all, I can understand why this feud, this match, and in particular this pay-per-view is held in such high regard. Whenever you talk to wrestling fans about their favourite pay-per-views, Money in Bank 2011 is often brought up, and it's because it is a stellar pay-per-view. I think a couple of low spots in the whole show. I think the women's match is not good. The Kelly and Brie Bella match, and then the Mark Henry against Big Show match is it's nothing to write home about. But the rest of the card is actually quite good, and it's a shortish card as well. I think there's only like six main card matches, but they're all real. It's really entertaining to watch, a really fun pay-per-view.
I suppose with there only being sort of six or seven or whatever it was main show matches, I think six is right, actually. Yeah, six. There are a couple of them on there that go quite long, aren't there? For example, the Money in the Bank match is 25 minutes-ish. The second Money in the Bank match is just over a quarter of an hour. And obviously the match we're going to look at today is over half an hour as well. But plus you've got the bit at the end. So I suppose it's maybe short on match number, but what they do with that time, it is filled quite well with things that I find quite entertaining.
Yep, absolutely correct. It's really well done in terms of time management. There's no lull, apart from you get the two poor matches in the middle, which amount to about 10 minutes or so of ring time. But before that and after that, there's no lull in the action. It's just really top draw wrestling, especially for a time when WWE weren't exactly churning out the best in terms of product. This is a real standout for a 2011 WWE.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So we'll set the scene, I suppose, a little bit before we get into the actual match that won the vote on Twitter. Again, thank you very much for everyone for the interactions we've had and the voting on our poll and the questions people have been asking. We're going to get to them towards the end of the show. But again, thank you very much for all of that. That's awesome. The basic situation here going into sort of late June, early July of 2011 with the WWE is you have John Cena is your WWE champion with that big garish spinner belt and his Fruity Pebbles bright t-shirts and so on.
Absolutely.
Yes. Punk is still kind of tagging along with a few members of the Nexus here, isn't he? Is that correct?
Yeah, on the actual event, it comes out, and the Nexus is still part of his screen name on when it comes out to start the match. It still says CM Punk the Nexus.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. And at the time, CM Punk was kind of, I don't know how to word it, maybe edgy, I suppose, is a term to use with certain.
Yeah, it was definitely counterculture compared to what the WWE were putting out. He was the antithesis of what John Cena stood for. He eventually became the voice of the voiceless because of what happened in the build up to this show, and then obviously the match in the aftermath.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I went back and watched certain moments on the network over the last day or two to do research for this, one of the things that stood out to me straight away was on the June 27th episode of Raw. You had Shawn Michaels coming out to plug a TV show he was doing, and Punk interrupted him. And seeing Shawn Michaels and CM Punk in the ring at the same time, straight away to me as a fan of both of those guys, and you know, I'm a huge Michaels fan, I was like, oh, well, I've got to watch this. And there's just little comments that will get dropped in. Punk makes a comment about HBK having an addictive personality, for example. obviously making a little dig at his demons, as wrestling term is sometimes thrown around. HBK says, we're quite similar, you and I. We don't smoke, drink, or do drugs. And then Punk literally jumps in whilst Michaels is trying to carry on and says, any more? With a real funny look on his face. And that same show, we have the famous pipe bomb at the end.
Yes, we do.
He's sat at the top of the ramp after Cena and R-Truth are in a tables match at the end of the evening. He ends up costing Cena that match to R-Truth. He, being Punk, sorry, he walks to the top of the ramp sporting a fantastic retro-esque Stone Cold Steve Austin t-shirt and goes on potentially one of the best rants that WWE television has ever seen. Max, what were your thoughts when you were sat there watching the pipe bomb?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like I said, I kept up with wrestling around this time through websites and like lordsofpain.net, so I knew of the pipe bomb, but it wasn't until I came back to wrestling maybe 5-6 years later that I actually sat down and really kind of digested it, and then going back over it for research for this episode, you can see the real significance of the pipe bomb in terms of how unscripted it sounded. Now, I have no doubts in that wrestling world at that time, Vince McMahon knew exactly what was going on. I do believe that Punk got a little bit of kind of a leeway in what he was allowed to bring up, but it just, for me, it felt real. It felt absolutely real. From seeing him sitting at the top of the ramp, from him saying that he doesn't even hate Cena, he likes him a lot more than he does the doofuses in the back. It just felt so real, like this. We've been worked here. This is a massive, massive shoot. It sounded like a shoot interview. Like when they cut him off at the end, it kind of sows them seeds of doubt even more. And then in the following weeks, when he's saying he's going to leave with the title, refusing to sign a contract, it kind of blurred the lines from this being a storyline to, is Punk going to run off and take the WWE title with him? What is actually going to happen here? I think the significance of the pipe bomb is not overestimated one little bit. I think it's a brilliant promo.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. Some real gems that he throws in there as well. I'm breaking the fourth wall and has a little cheeky grin in the way. He even says hi to Hulk Cabana.
Yeah.
I got a big kick out of him saying he's going to take the WWE title and maybe defend it in New Japan or Ring of Honor. I thought that was great. From there, CM Punk ends up suspended for the next week on the July 4th episode of Raw. And this is where Mr. McMahon and John Cena, I think, really come into their own in this particular storyline, in this passage of time, with McMahon and Cena. They basically close the show. They are the main event spots, John Cena and McMahon in the ring of this episode of Raw. And they're arguing about the people. Cena's saying the people want to see Cena versus Punk, and you're silencing him because you're a coward, and various other bits and bobs there. Mm-hmm. There's a few throwbacks to a few comments referencing the Montreal Screwjob and how Vince won't allow a situation to happen like that, where somebody with a contract expiring has the possibility of taking the championship away, and so on. Eventually, Cena convinces Mr. McMahon to unsuspend Punk to allow him to come back on but McMahon's premise is, that's fine, you can have your match at Money in the Bank, but if you lose, you're fired, to John Cena. The following week, on the 11th, the July the 11th Monday Night Raw, the last episode before we go into the actual Money in the Bank pay-per-view itself, Punk returns, cuts a very funny promo at the beginning of the show with a megaphone, and we hear the line, "Do I have your attention now?" for the first time. Cena comes out, and again, Punk, very funnily talking to his megaphone, is saying, as John Cena's walking around the ring with his music blaring, he's saying, "Sir, I was not done yet. Sir, I was trying to talk. Excuse me, sir, your music is far too loud," to Cena as he's making his entrance, which absolutely pops me. That tickles me so much. And then we get the in-ring contract negotiation between Cena and Punk. And again, Punk makes a few little comments, sort of insider jokes, I guess, and has a little dig at McMahon about using the term "what a maneuver" on commentary, and Vince McMahon calls CM Punk Phil a couple of times. And we end up then with Punk and McMahon having a falling out, Cena's involved, and at this stage we're starting to see Cena getting booed quite a bit and Punk is getting cheered. Whereas at the start of all this, Punk was probably still picking up cheers, but there were more audible boos.
Yeah.
And they have a big falling out. Punk rips up the contract and says he's not signing. And basically that takes us right into the pay-per-view and Money in the Bank, Mags.
Yeah. It was very reminiscent of WrestleMania 18 with the turn between The Rock and Hogan, how fans started on with Rock being the huge babyface, and as the match went on, Hogan got more and more cheers, and it seems in this storyline, people were really gravitating towards CM Punk, and the almost bootlicking of John Cena was really kind of grinding on the fans, which would lead to him living that character for the next 8 years of wrestling, knowing that he was always have that kind of side of him, that the side of the fans that would never accept him, will always boo him, and we get the kind of rise above hate and stuff like that. So yeah, I thought the character work from all three people, like you mentioned earlier, was absolutely just played to perfection.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you said earlier on yourself, mate, didn't you, that this show is a great pay-per-view to watch, barring maybe the Divas match, I guess. But there wasn't many, in their defence, I guess, there wasn't many ladies in that contest for their in-ring ability, I suppose. I mean, they're doing the best they can, but it's not my cup of tea, I guess.
Very
but
true.
Also, I think there's a little bit of a hidden gem on this show as well. We get Christian versus Randy Orton for the World Heavyweight Championship, with the stipulation that if Orton is disqualified, then Orton would lose the title. I think this is a great little match. I think sometimes gets overlooked because you have the Money in the Bank sort of stunt fest, I guess, and then the show closes with this incredible Punk Cena contest. And this, just beforehand, I mean, gets a little lost in the shuffle. Can you remember this match, Mag? When was the last time we saw this one back?
Yeah, it was quite a while ago, but I was a massive Christian mark in the time when he was part of the tag team with Edge. I saw a lot of him, his work in TNA. I've always felt that he'd never got the respect that he should have got. And obviously this comes off of Edge being injured, and it was almost kind of like Christian was thrust into the title picture as a thank you to Edge, almost, which is, I felt, was always a little bit disrespectful. But I think he'll always go down as one of the more underrated performers. And when Randy Orton is on form, he's arguably one of the greatest wrestlers in the world. And in this storyline, you could tell he was fully invested. He absolutely worked so well with Christian. And the few matches that they had together, I thought they did really well. I liked the finish on this one where Orton was kept strong by not taking a pinfall loss, but still dropped the belt to Christian. Yeah, it was a really good match. And like I said, it was on a pay-per-view with quite a few good matches to go on. So yeah, it really adds to why this pay-per-view is held up in such high regard.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Christian's work, I think, in Impact, as it's known now, or TNA back in the day, when they had the likes of Sting and Kurt Angle was turning up there and so on. I mean, that was a great time for TNA, but Christian's work there as Christian Cage, I think, was absolutely superb as well. The guy, I think the guy does sometimes get a little bit overlooked because of other matches that may be on the cards that he is on, or potentially because, obviously, his tag partner was Edge, who was going to be an absolute superstar. But, yeah, it's a good little hidden gem if people want to pop back onto this pay-per-view and check it out if you haven't seen it for a while. It's only about 12 minutes, but it's a good little match.
It certainly is.
Okay, so July 17th, 2011, Money in the Bank. We are here, finally, at the main event with CM Punk, with his contract expiring at midnight that night, challenging John Cena for the WWE title. The crowd here, when Punk makes his entrance, I put it up on the show's Twitter account, at chain_wrestling, and I think I might have tagged it on the show's Facebook account as well, Facebook page as well. The crowd here is insane, isn't it? For the entrances are brilliant. They really set the tone, Mags, I think.
Yeah, I loved as well the entrance ramp, the fact that it wasn't above the crowd and you didn't have to walk down the ramp. It was almost the how wide and expansive it was as well. It really kind of like played into the fact that this was CM Punk coming home, and this was, by no stretch of the imagination, a partisan crowd. These guys worshipped CM Punk to the point where it felt like they had to delay John Cena coming out because the crowd were not ready to stop chanting CM Punk. I think there was about at least 4 or 5 minutes where he was just in the ring talking with the crowd, and the crowd were just chanting CM Punk, CM Punk. These were mental. The amount of signs that we see saying if Cena wins, we riot, or if Punk loses, we riot. Yeah, this was a crazy, crazy hot crowd.
Definitely. We have, actually, on that note, if you decide to go back and watch this match on the WWE Network, what I recommend you do is you get the thumbnails at the bottom, don't you? The sort of tabs at the bottom. Mm-hmm. If you scoot across to the last match, the Cena Punk match, and press play, you actually miss a little bit of the atmosphere because the cut comes in, I think, a few seconds too late. It's worth going to the end of the previous match, and you get the little video package, and then you hear the crowd chanting and building up before Punk's music hits. I mean, that really helps if you're watching back for the atmosphere.
Yeah, and I think watching that video package that comes just before this match as well, it's interesting to note that they cut the mic off on the pipe bomb when Punk is going to tell a story about Vince and bullying, and then that we get a video package for the WWE Be a Star. I mean, a lot of people probably wouldn't have noticed that, but that was something I picked up on. That God, that's ironic, considering that the best promo that you've had in years was cut off when he was just about to slate Vince for his bullying ways in the company, and then you're advertising an anti-bullying charity.
Yeah, definitely. With the entrances again, I don't want to sort of park on too much. We've got a match to cover, I suppose, but it's difficult to explain to people if they haven't seen just how impactful this whole atmosphere and this whole arena is at this moment. The atmosphere, it comes out of your television and just grabs you. It's electric. Mm-hmm. CM Punk at the time was coming down to a Killswitch Engage record.
This Fire Burns?
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Did that not used to be Kane's theme tune? I remember it being. Was it Kane's? I'm sure it was Kane's.
Possibly.
Beforehand.
Maybe. Yeah, I'll have to look that up, but that does ring a bell, yeah. But when it hits, the pop is just insane.
Mm-hmm.
But you almost get like a double pop, I think, because as you touched upon the entrance ramp, you kind of... It is big and expansive with the screens on and so on. But when Punk comes out, he walks out very slowly, so a lot of the crowd can't see him straight away. So you get the pop of the music playing, and then Punk emerges a few seconds later, and you get another reaction as the fans see him, don't you, Max?
Yeah. Just everything that he did in this build-up to the beginning of the match was just getting massive massive interactions. He gives his T-shirt to one of the fans, gets a massive chant. He sits in the ring, gets a massive chant. There's a part where you can see Colt Cabana and Ace Steel in the front row, gets a massive chant. The guy could have sat there and read out a nursery rhyme, and he would have got a massive chant. This crowd adored CM Punk. It's unreal, absolutely unreal.
Is his mum in the front row as well? Is that right?
Yeah, I would not be surprised.
Yeah. At one stage, the CM Punk chants actually drown out majority of the music. Mm-hmm. It's not, as we've referred to before, bad editing or bad audio that WCW used to have. This is just the volume of the crowd drying out the music playing through the PA system. That is insane. And then you get the other side of the coin.
The crowd drown out John Cena as soon as that rabadoo bit hits.
Yeah.
The crowd instantly, like, it's almost like a tidal wave of just incessant booing. This guy is going to get lynched. It's absolutely. I would not want to come out to that, especially when you're the face of the company. You've held that company on your back for the last 5 years, and then you're coming out to a raucous boo like that. I mean, as a wrestler, he probably thinks, my job's done. This crowd hate me. We have got them in the palm of our hands. It was... I've not seen Cena get booed like that ever.
That's what I was going to ask, actually. Is that the biggest negative reaction? It was one of the biggest negative reactions I can remember, especially if it was for someone who, in theory, you're not booking for them to get that, are you? It's not like you're booking him to be a big, that this is your number one bad guy. Like you said, this is the face of the company. Mm-hmm. Is it the biggest reaction in a negative way that we've heard? Reigns got a few, didn't he?
Yeah, I was just going to say, the only ones that I can really remember are going back to like the late 80s, early 90s, when we weren't quite as savvy towards wrestling characters. I think Sergeant Slaughter used to get quite a lot of bad boos in that whole horrific Iraqi sympathizer gimmick that he run. But if you're looking at modern...
Hogan saves the world!
But if you're looking at modern day, the only one that really compares to this is when Roman Reigns beat Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's a good show, actually. I've forgotten about that.
The day after when he comes out and the It's My Yard promo. That's given me tingles how brutal that guy got abused for that tiny promo, and he got absolutely booed out the building.
Oh, do you remember when Cena faced Rob Van Dam at the ECW?
Oh, man, yeah, the 2015.
He'd throw his shirt into the crowd, and they'd throw it back, and he just
about got... About four or five times they threw it back, yeah. That's another good shout. So, yeah, Cena's good at drawing heat, apparently, then.
I really take pleasure in watching people get booed who shouldn't be. I don't know why. It may be some kind of sick side of me. I don't know. But watching, like, when Reigns used to, you know, they want him to be cheered and he get booed out of the building. I don't know why. I just really like that.
Yeah,
it just really tickles me for some reason.
I think it's a case of because you you're not following what they want. You're not like a sheep. You're not following what they want you to follow. It's a case of, if I don't want to like him, I won't like him. And it's that kind of mentality, I think.
Yeah. I'm not a massive Reigns fan. I mean, at the moment, it works great, but I've always had a bit of a begrudging feeling towards him because my wife thinks he's the most wonderful man walking the planet. I'll be straight with you, Mags. A couple of grey hairs coming through or not, my Barnett's better than his, I'll tell you that now. All right? I got better hair than Roman Reigns, I'll tell you that.
Fact.
Getting back to the reactions of the crowds and so on in the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, Jerry Lawler quite openly states in his excitable, squeaky way, I don't know if there's a single John Cena fan here. I don't know if there's a single John Cena fan in the building, as the crowd are literally chanting, let's go Cena. It's just like, come on, mate.
There was a guy in the front row that was dressed exactly like Cena. And he has a sign saying, Cena, come and meet Cena.
Yeah.
So they were Cena fans there. It's just they were a hell of a lot more CM Punk fans.
Yeah. A few real sort of excellent spots in this match, but a few also I think that I don't want to constantly be seen as digging out at John Cena because I quite like the guy. I kind of wish he was still involved in wrestling now, but a few moments that weren't that great that we'll come to. But one that stood out to me that was quite good is one stage, I suppose halfway through the match potentially. I mean, it's difficult to judge time-wise because I just got lost in watching the contest.
Mm-hmm.
There's the moment where Cena and Punk are either side of the ropes with one on the apron, one in the ring, and they tease the suplex to the outside from the ring apron.
Yeah.
Normally, this gets reversed. And we're all familiar with how this works. They tease the big bump, it gets reversed, and the guy suplexes his opponent back into the ring even though it's over the ropes, it's very much a standard suplex bump, I guess. Not belittling what these guys do in any way, but it is that sort of traditional suplex bump. However, on this occasion, they actually do it. They suplex each other onto the floor from the apron, and it looks vicious.
Yeah, it was a great kind of... And you... You were saying that you don't want to rag on Cena. I thought that he had a really good match here. I mean, Cena gets a lot of flack for having kind of like the five moves of doom and stuff like that. But I felt that he really played up to the crowd in terms of at the very beginning, he went to slow the wrestling down with arm bars and wrist locks and stuff like that. Things that Cena perhaps wouldn't normally have in his arsenal, and you could see how he was getting that horrible reaction from the crowd. But then when Punk was able to kind of reverse the hold or pull off a hip toss or a drop kick or any kind of like offense, the crowd was absolutely eating it up. I really thought that was a clever way to start the match by having that kind of almost dueling crowd reactions. And I think that they both held their own. They both had periods where they were taking the lead in terms of offense. I loved when they were going for each other's finishing moves and the amount of times they each went for a finishing move and wasn't able to pull it off. This flowed really, really well as a match for me. I really kind of enjoyed it. There was no massive lulls in pace. It was a really well-timed and really well-flowing match.
Yeah, I think so. And we had a few interactions on Twitter of people saying that the crowd made this match potentially better than the actual match it was.
Yeah, perhaps.
I agree. I mean, the atmosphere for me is a big thing. Same as Rock Hogan at WrestleMania 18.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch that back, the match itself, there's not the crowd kind of makes that, I guess. But we also have some moments from Cena that I'm not a fan of. To me, especially when you're in such a high-profile position as these guys are, I think you should stick to what you're good at.
Okay.
The fact that John Cena always tries to use this awful STF maneuver that he's doing.
Multiple times as well.
Terrible. I mean, if you're going to use it, go back and dig out some old WCW Saturday Night tapes from like 1993. And watch William Regal, Stephen Regal, as he was known then. Watch him apply an STF. That's how it's done. watch Chris Benoit, watch some of these guys in Japan apply these maneuvers. Don't, John Cena, please, if you're going to come back at any stage and you want to use this move again, please just do a bit of homework and have a look how it should be done, because it looks it looks dreadful. And they also uses an abdominal stretch at one stage, and I can't put my finger on why, but it just looks weird. It looks awkward and off, and I can't figure out why that is. It just looks strange. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's because Cena's arsenal is not usually kind of a submission or grinding kind of maneuver. So, he doesn't pull them off to the best. But yeah, I agree with the STF. He doesn't put any torque in it whatsoever. He literally puts his arms under the chin, and there's no stretching of the neck or of the body. It's just he's hugging him. He's almost hugging him by having the leg bent behind him and like gently cradling the face.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a nice little cuddle, isn't it?
A struggle cuddle.
That's a struggle cuddle. Oh, that's a completely different situation again, mate. What's going on with you tonight? What's happening here? We've got a cool spot where Cena goes for the "you can't see me" fist drop move, and he leans over Punk to do the whole "you can't see me" hand wave. And Punk simply just kicks him straight in the mush, and the crowd pop huge for this. I thought that was so simple, but it was great. And then on another occasion, Cena goes for the attitude adjustment, and we have a wonderful moment of WWE commentary here where Cole declares Punk landed on his feet, when in actual fact he landed straight on his arse. And it's like, again, it's just like, why do these things happen? I don't understand. Why can't just call what you see? You know, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it felt that definitely felt like he was meant to land on his feet, and the script said he was to land on his feet, but he didn't land on his feet. But for me, one of the kind of stars, well, no, stars is maybe putting a bit too much on it, but I do like how subdued Jerry Lawler was in this match. Normally we get a very kind of hyperactive Jerry Lawler who's usually like screaming at the top of his voice. And whilst we do get points of him in this match doing that, all throughout I felt like he was very subdued, and it kind of like adds to the gravitas of the situation. Like, he felt his job maybe on the line, because if Punk goes away with the WWE title, what's going to be come of the World Wrestling Federation afterwards? I did like that subtlety. There were points where they were talking about the amount of people who've held the title, and I think they said at the time there was 40. And then you get Booker who said, yeah, I've never held this title, but it was always the one that meant so much, and I would have loved to have held it. And then Michael Cole throws to Jerry Lawler and says, you've never held this title as well, have you? And it takes Jerry about 40 seconds to say something back. It's just like, you could tell he was thrown off it. And yeah, what are you trying to say, Michael?
Yeah, what's your point? Yeah, he got really snarky about it, didn't he?
He was pissed. But yeah, I did like the fact that he wasn't his normal kind of overexcited self, because of it kind of lended to the importance of the match.
Yeah, definitely. We get a huge crowd pop. It seems like we're getting one of these every 2 to 3 minutes at this stage when Punk kicks out of an attitude adjustment. Mm-hmm. And then eventually we have Mr. McMahon and John Laurinaitis arriving. They kind of tease a Montreal Screwjob finish, I guess, when Cena applies that STF death hold, and he's giving Punk a little cuddle on the floor there. Cena jumps out the ring to stop Laurinaitis ringing the bell, because obviously Punk is not submitting, is not giving up, very similar to how Brett did in 97, I guess. And then that's what takes us to our finish, Max, if you want to run through that one, bud.
Yeah, so like you said, we get Vince waving the finger, selling Johnny Ace to go and ring the bell. It felt weird that Johnny took so long to actually go and run for the bell. I think he was waiting for a cue off Cena for when he was to go past. Cena slides out of the ring, absolutely drops John Laurinaitis with a punch. That was a glorious punch. Then yeah. stands at the entrance side of the ring to tell Vince, "I don't want to win it this way." He's not submitting. It's a fart. Gets back in the ring, gets a go to sleep, and gets pinned. New WWE champion, and the crowd. I mean, we've spoke about the crowd all the way through this episode, how they absolutely adore CM Punk. They went mental. They absolutely went nuts when CM Punk won that title. Vince looked distraught. Absolutely distraught, gets onto the mic, says, "Come on, bring Alberto Del Rio out," because obviously he just won the Money in the Bank for Raw earlier in the show. So he's bring him out, get him to cash in, because Vince is thinking, how am I keeping this title in this company? Alberto Del Rio runs out, just gets booted clean in the face, sparked out. That was such a glorious, glorious move. You see Punk laughing his head off at Vince, and then the perfect way to end it was him sitting on the barrier, kissing Vince goodbye, and then walking out of the arena through the crowd, who absolutely adored him. And yeah, and where is the WWE title going to go? What's going to happen with the company? This was monumental and a perfect way to end a great match and a great storyline.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And where they went from there as well, which we won't get into on today's episode, because potentially we could link to it again in the future. Well, I hope we do at some stage link to it again in the future, because it's a real fond memories for me watching this back in the day. But where they go from here with Punk and Cena and the two championships, which kind of helped link it to last week's show, mm-hmm. and the match at SummerSlam and other things, and then eventually Punk siding with Heyman for a while. Just brilliant television, brilliant time in WWE. Really, really well produced matches and segments, and just entertaining to watch back. I really enjoyed going back through this.
Yeah.
So I mean, there we go, then, Max. I suppose that takes us through today's link in the chain. We normally rate all the matches we watch out of 10. Max, after a very, very high scoring match last week, where do we put this one?
Again, I don't want it to be a 10, because I don't know if this is the very best match that we'll ever get on here, and I hope it isn't. I hope we always get matches that are kind of astound us. So I'm going to go with 9. In terms of wrestling, I've seen better matches, absolutely. But in terms of the atmosphere and the feeling behind the match, I can't go any lower than a 9.
No, I agree. A 9 is spot on. The atmosphere does really make it for me. The crowd really does make it. The match, I remember, being honest, looking back, it's more up and down than I remember. It's not a constant. It's not constantly brilliant. There's more sort of peaks and troughs to it, I guess. Good moments, bad moments. But the atmosphere makes it for me. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed going back and watching it. So, yeah, for me, I agree with you, Mags. I mean, who am I to disagree with the podcaster of the year anyway? No, for me, it's a 9 out of 10 as well, mate. I fully agree with you. Should we jump to Twitter and see what people have been saying?
Yeah, because I think this has kind of erupted on wrestling Twitter, but a lot of affection for this match, and we've got a lot of feedback and some questions about it. So, yeah, let's jump into it.
Yep, okay. First of all, thank you to everyone who has messaged in or tweeted the show with regards to a question or a suggestion for the next step, where we go from here. First of all, someone that you know very well, Mags, at Radio Techers. Do you want to tell everyone listening about Radio Techers, mate, a little project of yours?
Yes, Radio Techers is a project that I have with a couple of guys from Headlock Talk. Tanner and Stephen, which is available on this network, Visionaries Global Media, and it's also live on the Shooting the Sports YouTube. We analyse and watch football, and that's actual football for you English fans, not hand egg, as the Americans would call football. Yeah, it's just a good time having a couple of mates and watching a game of footy.
Yeah, I can recommend that show. I mean, I enjoy a game of football myself, so it's a good listen. I recommend it. But at Radio Tech has tweeted in, people quite often ask if Punk is going to return. Radio Tech here is asking, should Punk return, and if so, where? I mean, do we think professional wrestling would be a better place if he returned, Mags? Should Punk return from that aspect?
Okay, so I mean, this I can lead into this with my experiences with Punk personally, I suppose, first.
I was going to ask you about this. Yeah, yeah, please. I'm just going to sit back now and let you go on, mate. Please explain what's happened there.
Okay, so as I said at the beginning of the episode, this was well in the part of my life where I was just not watching wrestling at all. So I don't have that kind of emotional connection to Punk that some of my Twitter friends have. That's not to say that I dislike him at all. I don't have any kind of feelings either way towards the guy. But I was once on Twitter being in a conversation and CM Punk's name come up, and someone had highlighted a tweet that he put up, and I found that I was blocked. I couldn't see the tweet, so I couldn't like really give context in the conversation. But what baffled me about it was I have never, or not knowingly ever, mentioned CM Punk in my time on wrestling social media. I've never spoken about CM Punk because I didn't really, like I said, it wasn't part of my wrestling background, so I didn't have that kind of affection for him. I found out I've been blocked by CM Punk for nothing, I assume, unless I've been involved with a conversation that he doesn't quite lack, and he just mass blocked everybody who was involved in that conversation. I have no idea, but I've never had any personal interactions with him. I've never quote tweeted him or replied to him or anything like that, but I found that I've been blocked by good old Phil Brooks, CM Punk, which is, it's doubly ironic because I'm an MMA fan, and we've watched all these MMA fights. So it's weird that I've been blocked by the voice of the voiceless.
Yeah, that is a bit strange.
I've also been blocked by Stone Cold Steve Austin, but that's a total other story.
Okay, have we got time for that one now? Do you want to spill the beans on that one?
This is probably a little bit less PG than the Punk one, but again, this was not my doing. Stone Cold, one of my favourite wrestlers of all time. I absolutely adore Stone Cold Steve Austin. But I was involved in a conversation with Visionaries Global Media star Graham Bagshaw and a few other people. And the conversation got on to pegging, and somebody tagged Stone Cold Steve Austin in the conversation. So he blocked a lot of people, and me was being one of them, yeah.
Punk saw that.
Maybe he was not a fan of pegging. Maybe he was a fan of pegging, and I offended him on it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, or perhaps he saw this. He scrolled back through your timeline a little bit, trying to get a feel of the person who's putting these tweets out, and then read about your beans in a bowl and got upset about all that nonsense that you were talking about earlier. Maybe that upset.
Perhaps it's probably more likely that he's not looked at my profile at all and just seen my face and thought, yeah, block that bitch.
Block that bitch. Okay, well, there we go. You know, little insight into how Mag spends his time when he's not broadcasting.
Yeah, anyway, that didn't answer the question. I think the question was, should Punk come back to wrestling? And even after all that and my what you could say I'm biased, I suppose, with hatred for Punk, which I don't hate him. I think he's an absolutely amazing wrestler. I absolutely believe he should come back. I think he's got way more to give to the wrestling business. Maybe not so much in terms of in-ring, but he's definitely got a brilliant man for wrestling. I think he does need to kind of get over his own self-importance, maybe. I think the wrestling industry burnt him a little bit, and he struggled to get over that. But yeah, I think he should come back. Maybe not to WWE, maybe to kind of help the next generation. I'd like to see him maybe come back to Ring of Honor.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I mean, would that, do you think that be an option? But to me, Punk, he's going to be looking. He's financially set for life, I would imagine. But at the end of the day, money's money. The bottom line's the bottom line. Would Ring of Honor be able to give him the payday and, I suppose, the exposure he requires? I would probably maybe lean towards no with those questions.
Yeah, perhaps. But like I said, I think he's financially set, and maybe it would be the kind of how I don't even know how to phrase this. Just the fulfillment of being involved and having your kind of mindset in the wrestling world rather than the financial benefit, I suppose. And then if you cut Marty Scurll's contract out, you've got some money to pay him, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess. okay, we have Scott WWEF1, Scott Robinson, I believe his name. I've written his name down here. Apologies, Scott. How important do we think that this CM Punk John Cena match was in the context of wrestling in general? How big a deal was this? How important was this to the landscape of wrestling at the time? I think, as I've said before, this was very important. It got me interested again. There's plenty of people I speak to in general, and when I'm interviewing people or talking to people for my other show at SJP, that cite Punk and this summer being something that reignited their love for wrestling. I think it's quite important in the context of relaxed fans coming back. Max, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think not only was it important in bringing those kind of disillusioned wrestling fans who, like myself, I got disillusioned in about 2006. If I would have seen this at the time, this could have been easily something that dragged me back into wrestling. I can totally see that mindset. But what I also think it does kind of bridges the gap between the hot indie scene that was happening around that time and the WWE. Obviously, Punk was one of the first few from that really that cool crop of Ring of Honor that slowly fed the WWE system. And I think he was like that bridge almost of bringing those cool fans back to wrestling after quite a few years in the doldrums. So yeah, I think the importance of this match is definitely not something that should be overlooked.
No, I agree. Scott also suggests a match with CM Punk and Raven from TNA as the next step in the chain.
Interesting.
That's one that doesn't ring a bell for me, actually. But I mean, it's quite interesting as well that we get these suggestions, and if we don't use them straight away, I do actually go and check some of these out, because I'll watch any wrestling, and some suggestions we get, I either can't remember or I've never seen. So to me, it's great. This is eye-opening to some matches that I didn't even know existed before. So it's brilliant.
Much like many of the UTT Rob ones, where he nominates a match that only he has seen.
Well, coming to UTT Rob, actually, it's not that obscure in any way, shape or form this week, mate. First of all, his question: if Punk stays, as opposed to disappears, in a few years' time from this moment in the wrestling timeline, who ends up being a bigger draw, do we think? Cena or Punk in the long term?
I don't think that we would have gone past Cena being the big draw. He was, historically, if you look through WWE, it's always been McMahon's choice to who is the head of the table. We had Hogan, we had when Hogan was ready to leave. It was Warrior. Then it was back to Hogan. We had Austin and The Rock. These were all guys that Vince handpicked as the face of the company. And when a wrestler who is not handpicked by Vince as being the person who he wants at the front of his company, he has a way of kind of knocking them down a peg or two. Take, for example, Daniel Bryan. The crowd wanted Daniel Bryan as the guy in wrestling, and we didn't get it. We got it for a little while just to satiate us as fans, but it soon gets to the point where we get the person that Vince wants at the top. Same with Kofi Kingston. The crowd wanted Kofi so much that he got his WrestleMania moment not long after that. We're back down to who Vince wants. And I think the same would have happened here. We would have had Punk having his moment in the sun, absolutely. But long-term, Vince had his heart set on Cena being the guy to carry the company. And to be fair, looking back now with 2020 hours, it was probably the right decision because Cena, for all his faults, has carried that company for so long on his back. I don't think Punk would have been that kind of person. I don't think Punk would have been the person to live, breathe, bleed, sweat WWE the way that John Cena did.
Yeah, I agree. Cena, I think, was always destined to be, I suppose, in a way, the last of the big draws. I mean, I don't know how big a draw he was. I mean, he's not obviously at Austin or Hogan level, but when you're looking at the peaks in the business, he had a spell where he was an important draw. His name was on the shows. They did better than when his name was not on the shows.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now WWE's the draw is not the wrestlers at all. It's the company. It's the brand of WWE. I don't think Vince would want people like the hearts of the Rocks and the Austins and, into a smaller extent, the Cenas, because if that's who the fans are gravitating towards, when they go or when they get injured, those fans drift off. He wants the fans to be WWE fans rather than wrestler X fans, almost.
Yeah, I mean, Lesnar makes a difference, doesn't he, to buy rates and TV ratings if he's advertised for a random episode of Raw or something. So I suppose he is still quite a substantial draw from that aspect. But I know what you mean. It's more like the brand.
Yeah.
And the same with WrestleMania, isn't it? It's the brand of WrestleMania as opposed to certain matches that McMahon tries to push as the draw, the moneymaker now, as opposed to back in the day, I guess. UTT Rob's suggestion for the next link in the chain is actually a match from, I think it was SmackDown quite a while back. And it was John Cena's debut against Kurt Angle. And that's a really interesting contest. The whole ruthless aggression era very much kicking off there.
Yeah, so it's a great pick.
Yeah, definitely. And lastly, I suppose, we're going to sort of band these two tweets in together because these two great, intelligent wrestling fans are coming up with very similar points. We have our good friend Conrad Newton at EL Compacto Newt on Twitter. And Mark, who is at Wrestling Jeebus on Twitter, both kind of asked the question of should Punk potentially have stayed away a little bit longer than maybe just the 2 weeks or whatever it was before returning with his championship and potentially have defended it on indie shows or other company shows if possible, and then come back and potentially have the rematch and the culmination of this two champion idea being dragged out further and on a bigger stage, maybe.
You know, they both make absolute sense, and the fact that CM Punk mentioned Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling in that part one, it's a massive missed opportunity for me. It would have this is at a period when WWE had no real competition. New Japan wasn't as big as it is now or has been over the last couple of years. There was certainly no AEW at the time. Ring of Honor was a footnote. Impact slash TNA was tiny. So WWE were the only show in town, and the fact that they were acknowledging companies smaller than them, I think it would have been a brilliant idea to really kind of hammer home the impact of Punk leaving this company with the top title and with no contract. I would have had him on indie shows. I would have had him on big shows for other companies. Really kind of do what Impact and AEW are doing right now, where they're working together for the betterment of the wrestling industry. You could have easily... you could have easily dealt with the likes of New Japan and maybe even got some New Japan talent coming over to WWE in kind of like compensation. But I would have definitely strung this out for a long, long time. This could have easily led up to a WrestleMania where we get to the point that Vince is so kind of pulling his hair out at the fact his title is being defended in companies that he has no control over. I think it would have really been, this could have been a brilliant long-term storyline, but Vince doesn't do long-term storylines. I mean, it wasn't long before this that we had John Cena being fired because of the Nexus storyline and then coming back, and it was Juan Cena a couple of weeks later. So... yeah, the long-term storyline wasn't in WWE's forte there, but how big would it have been to see the likes of Punk on a final battle for Ring of Honor or a Wrestle Kingdom for New Japan? It would have been amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it would have made some fantastic television, some fantastic opportunities. But, you know, we're not allowed nice things because...
Because with Vince McMahon is a douche.
Conrad there, and also Scott as well, whose question we took a little earlier, both also suggested Punk versus Samoa Joe from the second Punk Joe match from Ring of Honor as a potential next step in the chain as well, which is quite an interesting option. That kind of brings us to where we're going to go next then, Mags. Where would you like to go next in the chain? Where's the next step? Where's the next link, mate?
Okay, so I think, I had some ideas floating around in my big old noggin, but I think some of these picks from the listeners and our friends on Wrestling Twitter are really, really good. So I'm actually gonna, even though I've given him some grief for his watching wrestling that nobody else watches, I'm gonna go with UTT Rob's pick of Cena and his debut in the Ruthless Aggression in his match against Kurt Angle.
Ah, excellent stuff. His lovely little shorts and flat top haircut and... Yeah, no, a good time.
That haircut was horrific.
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah, okay. So my selection to go up against that, and I'll when this show comes out, obviously as normal, I'll post the poll on the Twitter, and I'll link up on the Facebook so people know what the options are. But the poll will always remain on Twitter with the dates of the SmackDown as well, and so on. To go up against that, I'm going to do the same, I think, Max. I had a few other ideas, but I'm going to sort of... Well, actually... No, I'll tell you where I'm going to go. We have John Cena there, who is a multiple-time WWE champion, headlined numerous WrestleManias, very patriotic fella, of course. Somebody else who you can kind of link to that for headlining WrestleManias, being a multiple-time champion, being a very patriotic fella.
Don't you dare.
It's, of course, Hulk Hogan. And at WrestleMania 7, Hulk Hogan saved the world.
I actually thought you'd be serious then. I thought, where's he going with this? And then you were... No, I mean, we're gonna have to, I'm gonna put that up for next week, no matter what. I'm putting that up to get it out of the way because I don't want that sword of Damocles hanging over my head every episode.
I just think it's funny listening to your reaction each time that there's the possibility you have to read
it. You sell it to me every single time though. I'm thinking, where's he going here? And then it turns out you're gonna be Slaughter versus Hogan, the match made in hell.
Is awful, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. But where I'm really going to go is I'm going to do something very similar to yourself. I'm going to go with Scott and Conrad's suggestion from Twitter of CM Punk versus Samoa Joe, the second contest they have in Ring of Honor. It's available on YouTube. I'm very thankful to Conrad who has sent the link. I will post that up as well if it wins the poll and so on, so people have access to find this match. I'm very intrigued in this because I'll be honest, Max, I don't know if I've ever seen this.
I don't believe that I have. So it's going to be a new one for me. Samoa Joe has always been someone who I've really enjoyed his work, but he's just never got the rub in WWE. He's never kind of reached the heights that he kind of should have done. So yeah, it'd be an interesting to go into this blind, almost not even knowing the context of the match. So
Yeah, definitely. So again, thank you very much to everybody getting hold of the show and giving us questions and suggestions. Really appreciate that. The options for the poll for the next link, the next step in the chain, is John Cena versus Kurt Angle in Cena's debut on SmackDown, or potentially Samoa Joe versus CM Punk 2, I guess, from a Ring of Honor show. Again, thank you hugely to everyone who got in contact. You can contact the show at chain_wrestling. You can contact me at SJPWords. Mags, where can people find you, my friend?
You can find me at DJ Kirkby, where I am a multiple award-winning podcaster. Come and check my amazing award-winning content out. Wow.
Podcast
feels so grateful
of the world.
Yeah. And I'm going to leave this show through the crowd waving at Simon whilst I take my trophy.
I'm going to, when I go into the editing and yeah, all that sort of side of things before I send this off to the network, I'm going to chuck in like Simply the Best by Tina Turner underneath that. Something like that, you know. I'm gonna...
Wow.
Yeah, okay. So I guess all that is left now on this week's episode of Chain Wrestling is to say yet again, thank you very much for the feedback. We appreciate it. Keep it up, everybody. And from myself, and from Mags, the award-winning Mr. Mags, I wish everyone listening a happy new year, and we'll speak to you next week, I guess. Thanks a lot, Mags. I'll see you soon.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Ta-da. We're done.
We didn't rate it, I don't think. Did we rate it?
Oh, bollocks.
I mean, we can do it now and you can just cut it in.
Yeah, okay. I might just leave this whole bit in. I don't stop firing press, stop it.
Yeah, just leaving the oh, bollocks.
Yeah. Just leave that in. Okay, so.
It could be next year's Christmas crackers.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, we'll do that then, shall we?